Calls to order here.
All righty. Chairperson David Withy.
Present.
Vice Chairperson Barbara Watkins.
Present.
Board Member Michael Blake.
Here.
Board Member Stephen Crone.
All right. Will you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all. All right. Just any last minute changes to the agenda? Are we good as is?
Nope, good as is.
Okay. All right, regular agenda item. First part, election for chairperson of the Board of Trustees for calendar 2020 and vice chair for same. Does anybody have any
I make a motion to have Dave continue to do it.
Did we?
Do you want a second or do you want to nominate someone else?
No, there's a second. That's not, did we have minutes from our last meeting?
Yeah, that goes down later.
Do we have the minutes?
The consent agenda, yeah. They were in the email packet, but I'm not sure if you have, I don't know if they normally.
I've never seen them in the email packet, which is fine.
I have a copy right here if you'd like.
I'm sorry.
That'd be great.
Okay.
I do have them. So I went right to the numbers.
That's the job hazard for both of us.
And
probably all three of us.
I'm good. Second.
Okay.
What was the motion? Just kidding.
Well, if you'd like, I can call like an official vote just so we can all
yes,
say aye.
We do need to do that.
Vice Chairperson Withy.
Aye. No, you're asking for, I'm sorry, if you
yeah.
thought it was the first motion, you're doing the motions together.
Right? Yeah, so,
No.
We have to do individual motions.
Correct.
So for the vice, we're going to do.
For the chairman.
Yeah, chairperson. So I have to get a full official vote for that first.
Yeah, that's what. Okay.
So.
Just go ahead and call the roll, start over, and trust me, I think it's going to work out. Watch this.
Vice Chairperson Withy.
Say that again.
Vice Chairperson Withy.
See, this that's is where we're problem. Having the issue.
He's chairperson. Chair.
I am so
no,
sorry.
That's okay. That's why I got a little confused. I was trying to.
Vice Chairperson Watkins. I am so sorry.
Aye.
Chairperson Withy.
Oh, no. Stop it. Aye.
I'm so sorry.
You're incorrigible.
Board Member Blake.
Aye.
I'm so sorry. Congratulations.
All right, Board Vice Chair. Any particular strong feelings one way or the other?
I know I'm not going to do it.
Well, then I nominate Barb Watkins.
Second.
We get a second. There we go.
Okay. All right. Board Member Blake.
Aye.
Chairperson Withy.
Aye.
And Vice Chairperson Watkins.
Aye.
Can you imagine doing this till like 2 or 3 in the morning?
Good
I'm
Lord.
So sorry.
All right.
I can.
I heard stories.
It requires a certain stamina, no doubt about it.
You wear them down. Always counting votes.
All right, working our way down here. Any public input at this time? Going once, twice, seeing none and hearing none, we will close public input for the moment and reopen toward the end. And for the consent agenda, which had, of course, the agenda for this meeting and the minutes, were there any questions? I didn't see anything in there that looked incorrect, no Scrivener's errors or anything like that. So for me, I think they're good. Can I get a motion for approval of the minutes?
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
All right. Vice Chairperson Withy? Jeez.
You're going
just
down.
Be Withy and it'd be okay. Listen, I'm destined. I think is what I'm supposed to say here.
Chairperson Withy. Vice Chairperson Watkins.
Aye.
Board Member Blake.
Aye.
Okay.
Good.
Page 2.
Moving right along. It's the regular agenda. David, hello. How are you?
All right. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I'm well.
Good. You're looking well. So would you care to share the investment results with us for the last quarter?
All right. I would like to do two things tonight. The top of the order, page one of the book, we've got our annual State of the Union address from my CEO, Mike Welker.
Is he here?
I'd like to give you a firm update.
Did he come in to give us this personally?
Oh, I'm sorry?
He didn't come in to give us this address personally?
No, but if you'd like to have him attend a meeting, I'd be happy to pass on the invitation.
No, you'll do.
I'm sure he would.
You'll do just fine.
And, of course, go into the numbers. Rather extraordinary period. But let's start with page one. Every year, the ANCO team gets together, and we get everyone from all over the country together for a strategic corporate lockdown. We strategize what worked, what we're doing going forward. And conveniently, this year we were at the Orlando Hard Rock Hotel, which provides a great venue for a big group gathering like that. But after the retreat, Mike puts together a letter, and first and foremost, on behalf of the firm, we want to thank you for the opportunity to have served as your consultant for all these years, and hopefully to continue to serve as your consultant. 2020 is a big year for ANCO. We're celebrating our 20-year anniversary. And for those of you that knew us in the Bogdan Group, we're obviously adding those years into the grand equation. The company has stayed the same, just the name has changed. We're 89 people strong per this book, but we recently brought on two more professionals, so I think our total number right now is right at 91. And we have $92 billion in assets under advisement. Our business model remains exactly the same, and we've got our mission statement in print there, and that's to represent the sole interest of our clients by redefining independence. So that basic core foundation of our business model going back to the Bogdan days is still very much in place. So that means the only fees that we receive or any compensation that we receive from anybody is strictly from you, what we bill, the hard dollar bill, we bill quarterly in arrears, no sharing or any kind of kickbacks, whatever you want to call it, from any vendor or mutual fund or product that we bring forward and recommend. We also, in 2020, well, also in previous years, but also in 2019, we continue to reinvest in the company. Mike's committed to continuing to build out resources. My research team is actually 19 professionals deep now, so we've got a really, really deep bench there. And we remain 100% employee-owned, and our two new partnerships were awarded this year. We didn't have any last year, but this year, Kim Sperlin, who's our CFO, we've got the corporate management division, and she's the CFO of the company. She was awarded a partnership, and then Evan Scussell, who's over on the product side, he's actually one of our research directors. He was awarded the partnership as well. Smart guy, good guy, so I'm glad to see him get it. So the next generation continues to make the roster in the partnership. So that's my update for you on ANCO. Our, the back page there shows the org chart and corporate operations on the left and the rest of us in the product group. Taking up the right-hand side. Any questions on ANCO? All right, let's dive into the numbers. And while you're addressing page four, let me just set the table. Sitting here a year ago, to start out 2019, we had four huge steps to climb the wall of worry, right? We had Brexit, we had fears of a European recession. We had a lot of fury about trade talks, especially with China. And the big one, which really loomed large towards the end of the year, was the absolute fear, people were convinced that the U.S. economy was going to go into a recession. Well, clearly, fast forward January, February of 2020, and we did make some progress on all of the items. And item number four, it appears it is not going to come to pass. The prognosis going forward and all the data, economic data, seem to support steady as she goes for the U.S. economy. And so we did not slip into that recession as the media was trying to get us to believe. So as a result of that, equity markets quite handily breached the wall of worry. And for the year, the S&P 500 was up 31.5%. The Barclays U.S. Aggregate, our proxy for investment-grade bonds, up 8.7. Interest rates did back up a little bit during this period of time, during the longer maturities, as investors, you know, kind of went over to the as investors accepted that growth was going to continue. If you recall, for our September year-end report, we only got 4.5% out of equities, very disappointing, but the bond market returned us 10.5%. Very unusual period of time. So with all these events transpiring, we just advanced the measurement period one quarter, and lo and behold, we've got a report that looks totally different than what we were talking about in September.
Dave, can I ask you just two questions?
Yes.
Is an inverted yield curve dead in terms of a predictor? Or was that a one-time phenomenon due to, negative rates elsewhere?
That's a great question that is going to get a subjective answer, right? And the yield curve is a predictor, especially speaking as a former bond PM, mm-hmm. has been a pretty good predictor. Arguably, to your point, the short-term rates and what's transpired with demand, global demand for U.S. long-term treasuries may be creating some dilution to what the yield curve is actually saying as opposed to what it may have been in the past. Another issue with the yield curve, we've had inverted yield curves before that reversed, and the whole idea went away and dissolved, and economic growth continued. So, we've had a few false starts, limited, but a few false starts before where economic growth resumed and the yield curve did not stay inverted. I think that's the most important thing. If the curve stays inverted, then that is more suggestive that a slowdown is inevitable.
So the second question is, and I don't think anybody knows the answer here to the first question. The second question is even harder. What day should I buy puts?
I'm sorry?
What day should I buy puts?
Equity puts?
Yeah. I mean, because the markets have just been dramatic and unexplainable, right, for an extended period of time.
Yeah, and I if I may use that as a great lead-in, because I can't answer that question, but I can use it as a lead-in for a little forward-looking discussion here. Mm-hmm. To finish out my remarks, what's different today sitting at this table than a year ago sitting at this table for all of us? Well, we've probably squeezed out all of the incremental returns from real estate that we're going to get. Real estate returns are going to revert back to the long-term norm, 5-6%. We've certainly squeezed out any incremental returns in low quality and pretty much across the credit spectrum, even investment-grade credit. We've pretty much squeezed out, arguably, a lot of the return coming from most alternative investment strategies. So looking forward, well, equity valuations, you can argue they're stretched or you can argue they're fully valued with the expectation that that whole multiple expansion that occurred in 2020 is going to be supported by an earnings growth, fundamental earnings growth that's going to, you know, close up that ratio. So if that's the case and you have a reasonably positive outlook, at least for the U.S. economy anyway, then that would suggest that we're going to be much more dependent on equities to make our actuarial required rate of return number in 2020, and certainly at least in the intermediate term. So notwithstanding, you know, the inevitable correction where the puts would certainly be helpful, but, you know, we would argue it will be important to keep an overweight, at least to domestic equity anyway, going forward to achieve the number, the actuarial return number. That's my best answer for the put question. So I guess I would, and I would just suggest not going the put route and keeping the overweight on to
that was a personal
equities.
Question, not what, but it, I mean, it is all related. I'm concerned. There really doesn't look to be any place to hide. And normally when we say that, we're talking about something different. But
right.
But my concern is that, as you've said, we've squeezed just about everything we have, and I would like to find a way to preserve our position.
I'm sorry, I missed the
last. I would like to find a way to preserve our position.
Right.
We've had 10 amazing years, and Mr. City Manager, I don't know if you have any thoughts or feelings on this as well, but
we
should be, you know, getting to a point where we start having this de-risking this discussion and potentially even the bigger discussion, you know, beyond that. My thoughts. Not expecting a response.
Okay, because I'm not sure you're going to get one.
Well, I'm trying. I mess around a little bit, but I'm trying to be fair. This is.
I think it's a valid point, and each of the last two or three meetings we've provided questions for you that you've answered, and about de-risking portfolios and when might be the right time, and the whole concept between asset allocation. I think everybody understands that you position yourself in a way that allows you to take advantage of up markets to the best you can and dampen the volatility on the downside. But to your point, there is a point at which you can adjust the allocation and keep it within spec, but reduce the risk in your position, which would run somewhat counter to what you're suggesting, which is if we're going to get return this year in 2020, it's going to be in all likelihood from equities, unless something else happens and interest rates keep go down and bonds outperform again. But you're not going to get another 2019. You're not going to have the S&P 500 up 30% and have bonds up 6 to 8% in the same. It's just not going to happen.
Right, highly unlikely. Right.
Yeah. What's our portfolio value?
57.5
As of when?
Yesterday, do you have? Because these are December numbers.
I'm sorry, I don't have that number.
How close do you have? I mean, only December numbers. That's it.
Yeah, I mean,
we're going to be up another 3%.
Yeah, I think January was pretty.
January
flat.
Is pretty flat, right? Yeah. But February's been good.
February's
month.
Been good. Yeah.
So even if you're up for the portfolio another 2% at 57 times 2% up, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I would like to schedule a conversation with everyone, and I think it's an appropriate question, an appropriate lead-in for that. I would like to schedule at the next meeting an investment policy review, but not just to review the document, to review the asset allocation that we're driving. And maybe put a little bit more focus on how we're applying the fixed income mandate here. The intermediate mandate has worked very well. We've garnered You know, arguably, I think the statistics say 85% of the return, leaving the bulk of the volatility on the table. But as interest rates continue to stay very, very low, you know, it calls into question, you know, what is the, you know, what's the primary purpose of the bond portfolio investment now? Any investment return that we earn from that portfolio, by all practical math, is bringing us down from and keeping us from hitting the actuarial required rate of return. And you know, I certainly would not be recommending extending credit risk at this point. I think that's completely the wrong time to do that. But you know, perhaps you know, an address to the purpose of the bond portfolio with regard to you know, the risk offset that we're looking for that portfolio to have.
Well, in the search for yield, then, David, would what's ANCO's perspective on preferred stock?
On preferreds,
mm-hmm.
We have not placed a significant emphasis on preferreds as far as a dedicated mm-hmm. allocation or manager. If an active equity manager, it would be within their purview to participate in a preferred. You know, if we did have an active equity, we don't have any, obviously, active domestic equity managers, I'm sorry. ANCO's position is that you know, we have not placed a lot of emphasis on adding a dedicated preferred manager to the
And board. Is there a rationale behind that?
It would be what?
Is there a rationale behind that?
Just the return profile, you know, when we're doing our modeling and mm-hmm. we're, you know, looking between the goalposts, you know, how do these securities all act and react? We just didn't see a fit for it for this type of portfolio. You know, for another application for a, you know, personal, you know, high net worth portfolio or whatnot, you know, for the individual, I guess I should say. You know, maybe there's a place in a portfolio strategy for this type of institutional management where, you know, we have a very clear marching orders, and that's to meet or hopefully exceed the actuarial required rate of return. We just found the asset class not to be, not to potentially contribute enough to that effort for us to extend any manpower over, you know, trying to come up with
with respect, I kind of feel like I'm getting a real hedged answer as to either that's we don't have a solution for that, or that we just don't like them, and it's okay to say that, but I don't want to have to interpret really how you mean what you're saying.
Yeah, we would recommend not using them in this application be more direct.
And because
And the reason is we don't think adding preferreds as an asset class is, I mean, it's just, it's not going to contribute enough to the total effort between the diversification it provides or potentially provides mm-hmm. And the total return generation that it puts out. We would rather keep our equity, our recommendation is to keep our equity investments, you know, pure equity, but giving the managers the ability to participate in unique circumstances if, you know, if they see fit.
Okay.
So top level, we would not use preferreds. Second level down, we would give our active managers the ability to do so if they think it's permissible, but it would really only be as a secondary addition to their management strat. Does that answer the question?
Yes, thank you. All right, so I don't want to...
Peanut gallery? staff
counts, go ahead.
We thought, I mean, you probably answered this already, but I mean, the strategy that Frank Mundo and we came up with a while back was a very passive strategy going after low fees because none of us wanted the stock pick. But $30 million, an index. Is there any value, not that a money manager can squeeze any more return out of the current market, but can they protect us on the downside? Is there any thought of taking some of this money out of a passive and putting in more of an active management to protect against the downside?
It's certainly a valid question. My response to that would be, I don't mind paying additional fees for an active manager who can do what you need him or her to do in the portfolio, but you're going to have a hard time finding, you're talking about hedge funds, and the hedge fund universe has had a really tough slog of it for years now, and you have so few that have been able to keep up with the market, much less outperform. And most of them have very specific mandates, so you can't really compare them to the market at large because they're hedging funds. They're designed to do certain things. But I don't know how this fits into the portfolio.
It's the age-old argument, right? And you can amass the data to support, you know, the active-passive argument that you wish to make for the day. Timing is important. Whatever time segment you want to choose to argue about, right, is a key element to that argument. I'm an old guy, been doing this for a really long time. Here's what I know. We don't know anything. The smarter you think you get is because you recognize what you don't know. That's where your intelligence comes from. And that's why I asked the very simple but unanswerable question, when do I buy puts? You know, I've been saying interest rates are going up since 2012, and I will be right if I live long enough.
Well, you were for a period of time.
If I live long enough. Well, I was talking about normalization, not spikes. And so at a very high level, my primary concern is we've had 10 years of thank God we were alive during that 10 years. The two before were a little tough. It's been a great time. And I sincerely think, you know, whether it's from a policy statement or from looking carefully at you know, where we are from a funded status, looking at where we are from a design point in time, from a strategic time frame with the city, I don't think this party's going to last forever. I'm not saying it's over today. I think we hopefully have a little bit of time, but I don't think we have all that much. And I think now is the time to be smart, be prudent, and to think about what we can do to not waste what has been a very good 10 years. You know, unfortunately, we started in not a good place, so we're not. Do you know what our funded status is right now? Where are we with our valuation?
We were pushing 93. We dropped it back another 25 basis points.
With the change, right.
Mm-hmm. So, but with the capital gains that we've had.
Got to be right back where we were.
We're doing, yeah. I'm guessing we're between 88 and 92 again.
Okay.
Just a hand grenade, but.
That's close enough for me, yep. Right. And the current valuation project, when should we have from the end of last
should
year?
We finished in about another 2 months, two and a half months.
Okay.
It's always too late. But.
So I know. Here's my wrench. I'm highly favor support your request to have a meeting to talk about policy. I'd like it to have a larger scope than just the policy. I'd like to talk about funded status, I'd like to talk about de-risking options, and I'd like to talk about ultimately termination at some point, right? I mean, this is a business, quite frankly, I think we should get out of. And here's the strongest argument. It's the numbers you just gave us. Let's call it 90. We just had the greatest 10 years in history, and we're at 90. Right, we're not at 120.
We started at a big hole.
We did, and I understand. I'm not, that wasn't a rock thrown at anybody other than probably me, right? But my point is that we should take a very careful look at where we are right now and see what we can do so that 5 years or 10 years from now, we're not looking back and saying, yeah, there was an opportunity and we didn't take it. So that's where I'm going with this. In terms of timing, I do want to add in one little personal piece. The May meeting,
yes,
I will not be here. I would like to be here for that. So to the extent that we could potentially adjust the timing of that meeting so that it's not in the month of May,
absolutely,
I would appreciate that because I would like to be involved in part of that.
Mr. Chair, we can, I mean, I've got a bias in this because I'm invested in this, so this young lady next to me. So, I mean, we can meet next month. It's really...
It's about time to put it together as well, and there's work that has to be done.
It's really on Mr. West's, his time frame, not ours. I can be here whenever he wants to be here.
It'd be great if we could have the evaluation done.
We can push them. They've had some turnover, so...
I understand how that works. I'm just saying that would be, if we're going to have a holistic conversation, it'd be good to have like all the puzzles and puzzle pieces on the table.
So the net present value of the assets, last time I looked on the last evaluation was $60 million. What was required to support the benefits that we've incurred already and the future benefits of what was on the books was $68 million. So mm-hmm. we're getting really close.
Right.
Well, now we're at 60 in our portfolio, so
right.
We're getting so close.
Right.
And I don't want to feel like we didn't answer your question about active managers and pay. So what you're really asking is, can we come up with a potential solution that fits within the portfolio in preparation for that next meeting? Do you have some thoughts in general about active managers as opposed to passive?
Yes. And bottom line, there's a place for both.
How about his question with respect to the effectiveness of paying for active management on a downside protection versus growth side?
Oh, our approach in our analysis of the active management is to place an emphasis actually on more on down market capture, particularly with regard to the value managers.
Right.
We understand that growth managers are operating under their own broad set of circumstances, but you know, generally are expected to provide outperformance to the upside, you know, for upmarket capture. But on the value side, we have we have quite a few managers that we worked with for quite a while that have delivered pretty consistent mm-hmm. Performance, you know, on the downside. There's been a different degree of that performance as the cycles have passed. So certainly, you know, we would argue there's a place for active and passive, and our bias, if you're going to bring in an active manager, would be to find those managers that are geared more towards downside protection and hopefully are keeping up 100%, no
sure.
more, on the upside. So, we can certainly have that discussion. I could bring in domestic equity value manager search. I think that would probably be the most appropriate place to start. I think there's another decision being made out there, which we don't have to make here because we're indexed, and that's that. What is my weighting as the cycle progresses in my growth versus my value? Mm-hmm. And we don't have to worry about that decision at the moment. But that rubber band, that valuation rubber band, as you're well aware, is very stretched. And, so that's another decision, the next chapter to read, whenever this chapter is over, it's going to go to value because, growth typically leads out. Every cycle is the same and, value, picks it up. That would be a constructive, I think that would be a constructive discussion. I can bring a active manager search, and we can take a look at that. I think for this discussion to be truly meaningful, I think it should include some actuarial perspective in two ways. What we're doing with the rate of return assumption, and if by way of quick example, if we drop the rate of return assumption substantially, then we can de-risk the investment portfolio, but that carries with it rather serious implications, mm-hmm. Which have to be worked out. I think the second piece that the actuary can bring to the table is with regard to the various types of funding policies that can be implemented. A lot of funding policies are the purview of the Board of Trustees when, you know, when the trustees have absolute say over the actuarial inputs. But there's another set that your plan sponsor can control or does control. And so those are other options in managing the cash flow and managing your way through those ups and downs through those cycles. There's been a lot of discussion, and you know, a lot of our other clients have been looking at that, and some have implemented you know, longer term funding policies with the main idea is to make sure that the funding process tries to mitigate that extreme ebb and flow, particularly the downflow, where it starts to put a real strain on the sponsor or on the city. So I think that would be a very important part. I would think the actuary would need to be involved with that part. And then from the investment part, I mean, our job is to whatever the agreed number is, and we would want to be a party to that discussion. We just got to make sure that we get the job done, given the market investment environment, and you know, any adjustments we can make to the portfolio, I certainly want to bring those ideas forward. Mm-hmm. So you know, for our part, for the next meeting, you know, we can bring in an active manager conversation. And I'd like to bring in some conversation about how we're addressing the bond portfolio while rates remain so low. And you know, I'd be happy, I don't want to step on toes or anything, but I'd be happy to get in touch with the actuary and have the discussion and you know, give them a heads up of you know, topically what, you know, what we'd like to discuss. I don't know if you want to.
I'm fine with that.
Go that way, or
party to the conversation. if we're, I want to be part of that conversation.
You have to be. Yeah, absolutely.
Now we'll just tell you what check to write.
All right. So if I understand this right, then we're all agreed. It's not a motion that needs to be passed, but we're recommending that we have an off-schedule meeting to discuss the asset allocation, the valuation, how these interrelate, potential active management strategies versus our current passive. So just reevaluate where we are, and particularly our potentially spending funding policies, just lifting up the hood and looking at it all.
Yes, sir.
All right.
And I heard Michael say that he wasn't here for the next one. So what we can do is we'd make a special meeting, mm-hmm. but I'll try to get the actuarial person, whether it be Jennifer Beauregard or whoever's working for her now.
Yeah.
We can try to get her to come to the meeting so that you have a nice presentation on both sides.
That'd be helpful.
Yeah. Can I reach out to her to see how quickly we can get the new valuation also? We just got the benefit statements, and it mm-hmm. usually is 60 to 90 days after we get the benefit statements.
Right.
So I asked.
Okay. So if there's any flexibility, just in deference, professional deference to the actuary, if we were to push the meeting out beyond May, that would give the actuary more time, and just a thought.
As long as the world doesn't come on.
Right.
I'm gone from like May 4th to June 5th.
Okay.
Okay.
Remember anything anymore?
So we can talk offline about the scheduling of that without, you know, running afoul of any sunshine laws. We're just talking about scheduling the next meeting. So let's do that. Dave, if I could, let's go ahead and continue with the report.
Sure.
I'm really sorry. Yeah, there's one other kind of question on there. The dollar, we've got like 20% exposure to non-dollar.
Our exposure, through the international equity only.
Right.
Actually,
on the
PIMCO Diversified Income Fund is going to have roughly a third of that portfolio. It's probably going to have some exposure, currency exposure there.
So are you guys, is your team looking at that at all, or?
That is not our purview.
Conversion issues there?
No. I mean, we would have an opinion, but not one that would lead to a specific investment recommendation on that. We would defer that to our frontline active management to address those issues. Yeah.
Well, from our allocation, of course, we decide which part we're going, you know, foreign exposures. I think, what equity are we at? Is it 15 is the policy?
So I'm on, if I may, let's advance to page 14. And I just want to cover the asset allocation. You know, for the moment, and again, notwithstanding next meeting's discussion, I would suggest my recommendation is to maintain the current positions. So I guess my short my short recommendation here is no change to the current asset allocation. We should let our equities run with the modest overweight we had in place, and keep the modest underweight in fixed income for the time being. And obviously, that was extremely helpful for the December period, mm-hmm. measurement period. All right, so let's go to the bottom line. And I owe the board, and I would like to apologize to Member Blake. We found an error in the report on the private placement. We're showing a return in that column, which does impact the rest of the numbers. It's decimal places of impact. But it is an error. I apologize for that. I see I have a corrected report in my email box here, which I will forward for the record. But the returns are basically going to be very, very, very close. They're going to be within, you know, decimal. So total fund net for the year was up 20.7%. And the three-year number annualizes at 10.6, five-year at 8.6, and the seven-year at 10.1.
David, I'm sorry, what page are you on?
Page 20, top line.
That's easier.
Thank you.
And that, if we drop down, that's a net number there. If we drop down to the next line, where we add some of the fees back, we can't add the mutual fund fees back, but some of the active manager fees get added back for a gross number. That puts the one-year number at 21.08, which from a peer group perspective, we end up in the top 14th percentile of the public fund universe. The three-year number at 11% puts us in the top 6th percentile. And the five-year number at 897 puts us in the top second percentile. So even though we're indexed all of our domestic equity, you know, the overweights and underweights to the allocation strategy and the value brought to the table by the limited number of active managers that we have there, we were actually able to outperform our self-imposed policy benchmark there, pretty close on the three-year, but for the five-year and the seven-year, we're still up on a net basis. So continuing down, let's go to page 22. And quickly running down the roster here, the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index, obviously up in line with the market, 30.8. RBC Global had a very nice recovery on the quarter, so this brought their one-year number up much closer, but their three-year number moves back ahead, their five-year number very strong, seven-year, 10-year. This was the first period of time, the last couple of quarters of 2019, where we actually saw material underperformance coming from this manager. So looks like they're back on track. The Gallia Core fixed income in that intermediate bond allocation there, up 7.3 versus 6.6. 3 year ahead of benchmark, 5 year ahead of benchmark, good peer group rankings for their respective universe. The Treasury Inflation Protection Securities that they're indexing for us, basically continued surprise there, nice numbers, 6.9%. They are indexing that, so those numbers should and are be very close. The short-term bond index, minimal monies allocated there. Short-term investments gave us 6.8 for the year. PIMCO Diversified Income Fund, this was a great period for risk-on or lower quality credit. And PIMCO, even though they did complete an upgrade to their overall strategy, they still have exposure to these markets. So they came in with a very nice 12.77%, top sixth percentile. Our real estate managers, American Core Realty, tracking closer to longer-term averages now, 6.3%. And Intercontinental continues to deliver very, very nice returns. This is one of the better performing managers in the investable, in our opinion, of investable real estate, hard asset real estate group there, up 9.46%, very nice. And then dropping down to page 23, the number that's incorrect there is the Crescent Direct Funding 2. There are no numbers to report for this quarter. The last statement date, we have not received December statements as of yet, so that should be showing a zero. And Crescent Direct Lending Fund 1 is still annualizing right around 7.7% on that IRR. And Fund 2, there'll be an adjustment to that 6.82% number. And so all adjustments are going to be up, obviously, because we're removing an erroneous negative number here and replacing it with a zero for the time being. Once we get the numbers, we're expecting continued positive results coming from those two managers. So any questions on the percentage returns?
Seems like we're good.
Can I leave you with page 29? Public funds are on, obviously, on a September year-end, but the rest of the world operates on a December calendar. Mm-hmm. So for comparison purposes, this is probably a nice time to take a look at that top right chart there, which shows the rolling three-year annualized rate of returns going back by quarter. The first three-year mark goes back to March of 15. And the silver dot represents the benchmark ranking with no fees, no management. And the blue dot, of course, represents your actual portfolio for those rolling periods of time. And as you're well aware, the shading of the peer group there from best to worst, from lighter to darker. So, it's nice to be in the top quartile or top decile, but I think what reads very well is the consistency of delivery here with all the decisions that this board and the other boards before you have made to help keep this investment program a very consistent performer. And that's my summary. Unless anyone has any questions.
Barb, are you good?
No. So on page 29.
29.
Yeah.
This actually goes directly to my earlier questions, the down market capture. Both 3 and 5 years were showing fairly high beta here, fairly aggressive.
So the
103% for the 3 year and 100, well, basically let's call it 103 for both.
Right, and obviously that's to our self-imposed passive benchmark, right?
Understand, and that's, I think, the area that we would particularly want to concentrate on at that, you know, next meeting.
Duly noted.
Any other questions about the portfolio performance allocation? Anything for
people would kill to have this kind of performance. I do mean
you bet
they would.
And David, just to reiterate, you said you have no recommendations for changes at this time.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Okay. All right, then why don't
Mr. Chairman move acceptance of the report with recommendation of no action.
Second.
All right. Board Member Bleek.
Aye.
Chairperson Withee.
Aye.
Vice Chairperson Watkins.
Aye.
David, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. We are ready for public input, if there is any.
Interesting.
Seeing no folks.
Seeing none. We will close public input, and the meeting is officially adjourned.
Thank you.
That was just for you, Dave.